Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Auckland Cricket Podcast. Sorry about lying that we'd be back last week, but we're back this week, and we have a packed pod once again. We've got Jamie, we've got Neil, we've got PJ. So welcome, gents.
Hello.
And as you'll be probably knee-deep in World Cup watching and analysing, etc., we're going to join you in that by going basically boots and all into what's been going on at the World Cup. What's up with the Black Caps, and what we think's coming up as well. And first up, performance against Kenya. Fairly predictable one-sided victory for the boys. Is this the new dawn of a new brilliant era where Hamish Bennett leads us to a World Cup victory on the back of a, you know, against really tough opposition against Kenya?
The next Jeff Allett, maybe.
Yes. World Cup wonder of 97. That's the one. Yeah. Okay, so seriously, what if absolutely anything can we read into that first round game?
Probably not too much, given that it's Kenya, but having said that, the bowlers did everything that were asked of them, and then even though McCullum was quite streaky, you know, still got there with 10 wickets in hand. You know, couldn't really do much more than that. Just, I suppose it's not their fault that they were playing Kenya on the day. Yeah, they were quite clinical and can't really ask for much more than that.
The cynical side of me would say that we're so rubbish that we don't even take sides like Kenya lightly. So we put in a whole bunch of preparation and played our absolute guts out, and obviously got a great result.
That is beyond cynical. That's impressive.
But yeah, I don't think you can read a lot into it, and the fact that headlines are now saying Bennett causes selection headache, I think it's a bit of a joke, because if you get 4 wickets against Kenya, I don't think it means that you should be playing ahead of Kyle Mills, who's a proven international performer.
So that's the next question, I suppose, seeing as that's about all we need to talk about, probably about that performance. Changes for the Australian game, do you see any coming? And that's probably the most obvious one right there, Mills for Bennett.
Yeah, I don't see how you can drop Bennett. I mean, I don't know why anyone would want to drop him. I can see them bringing Mills back against Zimbabwe. I mean, he's just come off a lower back strain. I can see them leaving the team as it is and maybe bringing Woodcock in, because Australia have shown in the warm-up game against India and against Zimbabwe that they struggle against spin bowling, and specifically spin bowling that turns away from the right-hand batsman. Mm. And that's what Luke Woodcock does. I mean, India have played 3-4 spinners in a game and knocked teams over with their spin bowling. And Australia's susceptible to it.
Zimbabwe played 5 apparently in their game.
Mm.
That's got to be a record, doesn't it?
And they were super economical.
Yeah.
And thanks to Tender Taibu, they knocked over a couple as well.
Yeah, I'd like to see the selectors take a bit of a punt on that. Maybe rest as opposed to dropping someone like Jimmy Franklin for what's that guy's name, Woodcock, so they can play
them against Australia.
Yeah, so that they can play the 3 spinners. I just think there's enough batting in there.
See,
to leave someone like Jimmy Franklin out for Woodcock and bring Mills in for who else could we, well, I'm gonna go Bennett, but I don't know, I'm sure there's someone else here you can drop.
I don't understand why people would be quickest to drop Franklin. He's got the highest batting average of any New Zealand player since March 2009. He was our best batsman in India.
Mm.
So, I mean, if any of the all-rounders are going to be dropped, it'd be
Vittori.
It'd probably be Stoiris.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that guy.
I mean, Stoiris didn't bowl a ball against Kenya.
Mm.
And he's batting around 6.
I'm quite happy for them to include Franklin, as long as they're not considering him as an all-rounder.
Mm. Yeah.
Because he's not.
Not
unless
anymore.
If you just call wandering in and bowling loopy half volleys that get smashed all over the ground being a bowler.
The reason I'd leave him out is because he is probably still considered an all-rounder, but he will get absolutely owned by Australia. I think he can do a job against other teams, but I just think Australia would murder him all over the park, whereas even someone like Scotty Stoiris, I think, could do a job against Australia with the ball, and you know, hopefully can score a few of the runs.
Thanks for both of them though. Stoiris is actually in good form at the moment, isn't he? He's been scoring runs, actually, so is Franklin. So interesting. So what are
if we're going on form, I mean, you'd probably drop Taylor. So
Cynically speaking, again, I reckon that given that it's 50 overs, we don't have to bowl Australia out, which is good because I don't think we can. So I'd rather strengthen our batting, you know, with the hope of scoring big to either chase down or set them a total.
350 plays 345.
Pretty much, yeah. And with all due respect to Luke Woodcock, in terms of bowlers that take the ball away from a right-handed batsman, Aussies faced Piyush Chawla and Ray Price so far, and they're far, far better bowlers than Luke Woodcock is. Plus, they have people like Harbhajan Singh. Zimbabwe didn't really have anyone at the other end, you know, notable, but Australia just seemed to go onto the shelf for some reason. Yeah, I suppose we've got Victorian Mills if he plays, but yeah, I can just see him taking to Woodcock, so would rather play the extra batsman.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure about it, but I wouldn't be shocked or dismayed if they brought Woodcock in. I mean, as you say, Australia went into their shells, but they've been in their shells now for two games in a row against India and against Zimbabwe, and maybe they've got a bit of a bugbear about spin bowling, so why not bring them in?
I'm confident that we can bring them out of their shells quite well. We've been good at that in the past. Okay, very quickly, everyone, then. Predictions for that game. It's on 25th, which is a couple of days away, I think.
Friday
night. Yeah. What do we reckon?
New Zealand.
Yeah. If we bat first, we take it. Don't give us a chance chasing.
Like the confidence in the pod. Jamie, this has got to be a no.
Yeah, I'm picking Australia quite comfortably.
Yeah, I'm in the cynics corner this time around. I think we're going to get owned.
I don't think it's cynical to think the better team by quite some distance is going to beat the worser team by quite some distance.
Okay, the realistic Black Caps supporter viewpoint. Okay, well, that's our Black Caps roundup, and look forward to that game on Friday. Hopefully it's a good contest. Let's see what else has been happening around the other games. Most recent game, and the most interesting one, really, because the associate sides have been pretty average up till now. The Poms almost getting tipped over by the Dutch. Neil, do you want to go on your 5-minute I love Ryan Tempiscade section? He was awesome, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. I was surprised, truth be told, not so much with his innings, but the fact that the Dutch scored 292 for a start, given England's bowling attack was full strength. And apart from Tendoskate and Cooper, who I think plays in Australia, South Australia,
yeah,
or something.
Yep.
Yeah, apart from them, you know, they don't really have anyone that should be scoring that many runs against a team like England. But no, good on them.
It shows though when you've got one guy who plays virtually all the way through and gets your big score.
Yeah.
The others only have to chip in with 30s and 40s, and suddenly you've got a big score.
Mm-hmm.
It makes all the difference, doesn't it?
Then at the same time, when England was batting, they didn't look in trouble at any point in the innings. So clearly the pitch was good to bat on. And they did lose a few wickets and only one with an over to spare, but they were coasting the whole time. So even though it looks like it was a close game, truth be told, I don't think it was. I can imagine England was pretty scared when they had to chase close to 300, but yeah, didn't look in doubt.
So what do we think then? Is it a case of the England bowlers then? Because if they're looking that comfortable when they're batting, then they'd be confident that those guys are scoring runs. But is it a case of the England bowlers having a bad day because that was considered their strength, that their bowling was going to give them any chance of winning something? Or, you know, in the case of Tendoskate just having a fantastic day and they'll get stronger because of that? Or do we think that shows that England, as we predicted, are going to be pretty average?
I think that was probably as well as the Netherlands are going to do batting first, or batting at all, which is Tendoskate scoring the majority of their runs and others chipping in. So I think they basically did as well as they could batting. Yeah, England probably didn't bowl all that well. I didn't actually see actual footage, but I'm guessing they probably didn't bowl as well as they could have. But yeah, as Neil said, it looks like they fairly comfortably chased down close to 300. So I think it kind of augurs well for England, really, that an associate team's, you know, played out of their skins batting first, and yet they've cruised to a victory chasing. Possibly doesn't augur so well for the Netherlands. Maybe that was their one everything clicks into place batting innings that they're going to have in this tournament. Maybe they've got a bowling one up their sleeves, I don't know. But yeah, to play that well and still lose is probably pretty disheartening when, you know, worser teams in the past have played okay against some of the top teams and knocked them over. So I'd say they'd be pretty shattered after that effort, really.
Yeah, there's a good picture on, I think it was on Cricket Info, of the Peter Boren, who's the Netherlands captain, on his knees, head and hands, as the English scored the winning runs, which probably sums up how they're feeling after that one, I imagine. Other two games that involves a couple of the minnows, really. Australia, Zimbabwe, Sri Lanka, Canada. both fairly obvious results and pretty comprehensive. Canada were pretty awful by the looks of things, and Zimbabwe got knocked over by the pace attack of Australia. Anything any of you guys read into those games in terms of form so far?
What I've noticed is that sides batting first are starting out quite slowly. I don't know if that's something to do with the pitches or if it's bigger sides just kind of taking it easy against the minnows.
Hmm.
But Australia started painfully slowly, even with Shane Watson and Brad Haddin, who are notable big hitters.
28 off the first 10 overs, apparently.
Yeah, really cautious. Sri Lanka against Canada started off pretty slowly as well. Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how they approach other sides when they meet sides that are at their level.
Mm.
But that's one thing that I've noticed having watched all the games.
It's indicative perhaps that all the games might be played on pitches that are slightly slower than expected, and or that you get in other parts of the world. So yeah, which is probably it's probably bad news overall, isn't it? Because you want, you know, nice,
yeah,
hard bouncy true pitches for when you get the good games, the big games, so that you can get the 300s playing 300s kind of stuff.
Do we know when the first decent matchup is?
Tomorrow, it depends.
South Africa, West Indies.
Yeah, tomorrow.
It's not a bad matchup.
Yeah,
it's a huge weekend. Friday's us versus Aussie, Saturday's Sri Lanka, Pakistan, and Sunday's India, England. So a massive weekend.
And nice. Apparently the West Indies are guaranteed a quarterfinal place, according to Dwayne Bravo. Yep,
it'd
they're
be
shoo-in.
Interesting. Be interesting to see Gale against Dale Steyn and Morne Morkel after all his hype about himself. He's talked himself up a great deal.
I wouldn't be surprised if he comes off, but we shall see. Just
he's a
back
very unassuming
to,
man.
Yeah, absolutely. Doesn't. Yeah, he lacks for confidence. Just on the games that have happened so far, and harking back to something that Martin Crowe, I think, said before the tournament started, is that I think the use of the power play, the batting power play, is going to be quite crucial in some of the closer fought matches. I think so far India is probably the one team that's used it really well. When they had two guys really going for it in the middle of the innings, I think it was maybe around about the 35th over they took it, instead of New Zealand's theory, which is wait until you get about 8 down and wait to the last 5 overs and hope that whoever's in happens to smash you some runs.
To be fair though, New Zealand are usually 4 down early, so
yeah,
then they're 8 down
that's
late,
true.
So you know, when you do it.
Yeah, it's tough, but I think that that could be quite crucial, and I hope that New Zealand has learnt, because I think we've got some guys in that middle order that could really take advantage of the power play, maybe more so than some of the other teams, and it may be a little ace up our sleeve that we may have.
Speaking of ace and aces, they should probably take a leaf out of the aces book, actually, how we did it in the one-day semi-final and the final, when we had Tim Mack going full bore in the semi-final and Lou Vincent going great guns in the final, and both times we took them early, as you say, earlier rather than later, when those guys were really, really going for it. And it came off.
I think they would have learned after the last one there out here as well against Pakistan, when was it Ryder and Guptill or McCullum, one of the two.
Guptill,
yeah, they had a century partnership. I mean, that would have been the perfect time to take it, especially on such a small ground. But everyone got out pretty quickly, and we were lucky that Pakistan assumed that we'd taken it for a couple of overs and brought the field up, but that's a different story. But yeah, India seems to be the only one that sort of got a grip of it at the moment.
Helps that they're usually about 200 for one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sehwag's already on 150 at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we should touch on that game, which was not a bad first up effort by India and Mr. Sehwag in particular, and Kohli. You were salivating over him earlier, Neil, about what kind of player he is, and I think we've talked about him in previous pods. But yeah, it's fair to say that Sehwag's probably in good form as well. Although, and it sounds bizarre, but can we perhaps say that India's bowling is potentially a concern, maybe in the later stages of the tournament? You know, Bangladesh still scored 270-odd and looked relatively comfortable, I think, at times through that innings. I know, say, it's churlish when they've won by 91 runs, but do you think that's potentially an issue for them?
It's been an issue for a while. I mean, they've got, without doubt, the best batting lineup in world cricket, but it's not the best bowling unit in world cricket. But if you can score 370 runs, then, I mean...
comes a moot point slightly, doesn't it?
Yeah, and these pitches are generally... the majority of them are playing quite slowly. and India's stacked with spin bowlers and batsmen who can bowl part-time spin. I mean, how many of the batsmen bowl? Tendulkar does, Sehwag does, Yuvraj is a genuine all-rounder, but I mean, they've got five or six spin bowlers in their side, and these pitches that they've been playing on are taking spin really well. So,
and possibly more importantly, there are pitches that, even though they are slow, are pitches that they know on their own, and they know how to play, you'd imagine, off them and still score quickly. So you'd think if that is the way that the pitch is going to play right throughout the tournament, that's got to be a huge advantage for those home sides.
I think it is a worry for them, though, because, you know, sure as eggs, they're going to have one match in this tournament where their batting lineup fails relatively.
Score 300.
Yeah, they only get 280 or something. And I think they've just got to hope that it's not in a crucial knockout game, because I don't think that bowling lineup necessarily could respond under pressure. I think they'll do a job, and yeah, they've got some spinners there that'll be handy and will definitely do a job when they're bowling to 300 plus scores. But if they're really put under pressure, if, you know, they haven't quite come off and they've only scored 280 and a decent side is chasing, I'd hate to think that a team that's that awesome will get, you know, knocked out in a quarterfinal or even in a semi, because they're, you know, they are really missing probably one key bowler.
So it's possibly the sides like, I guess you'd say, Australia, South Africa, who've got pretty well-rounded and decent pace attacks who might put them to the sword, potentially in a big game.
Yeah, well, under Zahir Khan, I don't think that they've really got another seamer who's proper world-class.
No, that's right. I think you did right. I think there's a few pretenders, but none of them are really right up there. Mm.
They lost Praveen Kumar before the tournament even started, and from what it looks like over here, him being injured and Ashish Nehra has either fallen out of favour or is carrying some sort of injury. So they've got Srisanth, Munaf Patel, and then spinning options in Chawla and Ashwin. It just looks like without Kumar there, they're looking for two more bowlers to support Harbhajan and Zahir, and are completely unsure about what combination that'll be. So I wouldn't be surprised if for the first few games they'll basically experiment with those guys, and maybe they'll get it right come the end of the tournament, who knows, but for now.
They've got a lot of bowling options, because Yusuf Pathan is another all-rounder. I don't hold too much stock in his bowling, but Dhoni is a pretty astute captain, and if it comes down to it, I can imagine him in any given situation where they're struggling to hold back a side from pulling in a 350 total. Dhoni would just be switching bowlers around the whole time. He's not scared of bowling one guy for an over and then changing him, bowling another guy for an over or two and then changing him.
Yeah.
He works these things out pretty well, and they've got a lot of bowling at their disposal.
All right, we'll see how it goes. As Neil has already said, some big games coming up. We finally get to see a few of the big guns facing each other over the next few days. So we'll start to get an idea of actually who is in form rather than who can knock over a few of the small ones. People also be out there looking very closely at what's going on in games, especially around this pod table, because we're all involved with the Cricket Info Fantasy League, as I imagine many of the listeners are out there as well. I believe, Jamie, you're coming second in our group of, what have we got, 20 people in our team?
40.
40?
I've got no idea.
At least 40.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Yes, I am coming second. Thank
well
you.
Done.
Thank you.
I believe I'm second in the pod. No, maybe. Are you in front of me, PJ?
I'm in front of everyone except Jamie.
Okay.
Around this table.
That's slightly revised, listeners. I'm third. But I'm in front of Neil, so that's okay. But if you'd like to join us, if you haven't already signed up for the Cricket Info Fantasy League, then get in there. I think you just need to have our number for the team. Sign up, join, and then go to use our number, which is 1104, and sign yourself up, and you can see whether you can beat the inestimable talents of the Auckland Cricket Podcast members. It's good fun. You get to choose your team. You get to change your team pretty much. How many? 40 changes throughout the course of the World Cup. So you can swap your team depending on who's playing the next day, etc. right throughout. And you've got a certain amount of money to spend. And you get double points for captain. It's all the usual fantasy stuff that makes it absolutely thrilling to be involved. What else have you got? Neil, you've got some comments, I believe, about you were actually watching the opening ceremony, or did you see portions of it?
No, I didn't even know. It was the night before. I didn't realise.
The night before?
Yeah, I presumed it would be before the first match, but That doesn't interest me anyway, truth be told. But
Bryan Adams?
Bryan Adams, yeah. No, I'm a fan, but why?
Perhaps a certain lack of currency in their selection there.
I'd imagine so, yeah.
So what, he was the main deal for their whatever
the opening they made? Yeah, maybe not the main one, because they had a whole bunch of, I suppose, local artists who I'm not familiar with. So maybe they
don't
were...
Don't know your Bollywood stars?
No, or my Bangladeshi hip-hop artists or whatever. But yeah, Bryan Adams was the one and it stuck out. And, you know, a Canadian singer who hasn't done anything since, Robin Hood?
thank God for that.
Yeah, it just really, really surprised me. The comedian Andy Zaltman, how you pronounce it, in his blog, which is quite entertaining actually, he wrote that maybe it was a massive mistake and the organisers were supposed to get Jimmy Adams, who was going to do a PowerPoint presentation on how to play a push to square leg for a single, which, yeah, I thought was quite amusing. But it really did surprise me that Bryan Adams performed at the opening ceremony. I doubt he knows what cricket is.
Do you think there might be quite a large stack of rejection letters in the organiser's office from Beyonce, you know, etc. Actual people who've had hits in the last decade.
And from speaking to a couple of mates' families that are from that part of the world, the likes of Bryan Adams, Richard Marx, Nazareth, those sort of people slash bands who, you know, you might have heard of, but not necessarily big in other parts of the world, the Western world, are superstars over there. So
this is like big in Japan stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Big in India.
It's like Men at Work in Brazil. It's just ridiculous. Or the Hof in Germany or something like that. You know, yeah, Bryan Adams is probably a superstar over there.
Unfathomable to all people except the country concerned.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm surprised Robbie Williams didn't turn up. He's kind of making a comeback, isn't he? I've heard him singing on the radio again.
Yeah, true. Take that, reunion.
Maybe Bryan was just lost and they sort of nabbed him on the off chance and went from there.
Mm-hmm.
Although maybe he's actually a part of the Canadian squad. I mean, they couldn't do a lot worse.
Actually, no, he's not Pakistani, so he can't be part of the Canadian squad.
He's an actual Canadian.
Yeah, so ruled out, really. Yeah, and what else has been happening around the World Cup? There's been some interesting work done by, as always, those chaps at Cricket Info. They've got some doppelgangers going up on there, some of which, you have to say, are a bit of a stretch.
Yes.
Mark Taylor for Mel Gibson, I think, was a big leap. But some are uncanny. What were the best ones, Jamie?
What's that, West Indian opening batsman?
Oh, Desmond Haynes.
Oh, Desmond Haynes and Forrest Whitaker. Almost identical.
Yeah, even with they have the same sort of dodgy lazy eye kind of thing. And,
absolutely.
And pockets under the eyes kind of thing.
My favourite one was, got his name again, bloody hell, the left arm opening bowler from Aussie with
Mitchell
hair.
Johnson. Oh. Bracken. No, Nathan Bracken. Yeah.
Nathan Bracken and Amelie Maresmo.
Yeah. That was quite uncanny, actually. That was scary.
Yeah.
But it makes sense, considering, you know, whenever Maresmo was playing, you always did wonder, you know, man, woman, whatever. So.
And Nathan Bracken's kind of disappeared off the cricketing scene just when Maresmo's tennis stock started to rise. So perhaps he has been ducking between the two sports.
Coincidence? Maybe not.
Question remains, have they been seen in the same room together?
Well, listeners, if you have seen them in the same room, please report in. We'd love to have your feedback on that one. We like to answer the big questions in this pod. That's pretty much it for the World Cup. I think we will be back next week, obviously, and doing a wrap of what's been going on.
And about three more games would have happened.
Yes. Yeah, we could go into... No, it'll just become a 10-minute rant about why this World Cup is so ridiculously long. But we won't go there. But it's ridiculously long. It's stupid. So yeah, there'll be heaps happening. We'll hopefully be reporting on how the Black Caps have absolutely slayed Australia and made them look like a bunch of dickheads. And before we go, though, let's do a quick revert to domestic cricket and what's been happening in Auckland. Aces unfortunately went down to Firebirds down Wellington last week. So that means they lost to the team who were on the bottom of the table, which is not great, but undone by a brilliant fifth wicket partnership between Neil Parlay, Michael Parlay, Neil.
Neil, yeah.
I always get those two confused. And man with the best name in domestic cricket, Austin Smalley. And that's just a surname, which led them to victory, which means the Aces have an awful lot to do in the last six rounds. They have only got 2 points and they're chasing CD on 26. And the big news about that is Bruce Martin, former ND spinner, is in for the Aces for their game starting tomorrow against his old teammates down at Colin Maiden. So
at least they can't lose to the bottom place team again.
That is true. Good to see you found that silver lining. So yeah, go the boys. I'm sure they will come up with something soon. They're not playing bad cricket, they're just not getting much going their way at the moment. And finally, club cricket. Congrats to the Suburbs New Lynn, who took out the 2020 competition last week down North Shore in the final. And if you do get a chance, get out to King's College, actually, this Sunday, because the one-day final is taking place between Parnell and Howick Pack. Parnell defending their title from last year. Howick Pack trying to claim back the title that they won 2 years ago, I believe. So should be a great game. Two really good sides and a great wicket out there at King's as well. So good luck to both sides and may the best team win. We will be back, as I've already said, in a week with loads to talk about the World Cup. So thanks very much for listening and we will catch you then.